All right. Good morning. 1 Corinthians. Oh, my. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4. Yes, we're back in Timothy. How exciting.
1 Timothy chapter 4. It's good, isn't it, that school's back in and our schedules are back. We've got everybody kind of home. Vacations are over. I don't know if that's a boo factor or a good factor, but it is wonderful having everybody here. We've got lots of visitors, and so we're glad that you guys are with us. Again, get to 1 Timothy chapter 4. We'll get there in just a second. You know, when you think about the word discipline, the first word in my brain, you know, sometimes you play that game where you say a word and the first word that comes to your mind, and my first word was spanking. And you think spanking, discipline. There's like the little girl that's 6 year old. She's 6 years old, little bitty child, 6 years old, and she's not doing good in class, and her dad's really upset with her because her grades aren't the way they need to be. So she comes to school the next Monday morning, little six-year-old, as sincere as she can, and looks at her teacher and says, "Mrs. Hayes, I don't want to scare you. I don't want to scare you." She goes, "But my dad just told me that if my grades don't improve, somebody's getting a spanking." Of course, it's the teacher's fault, right? In his book, Donald Whitney, those of you that have that book, if you haven't received the book yet, I know Kelly and Jim have purchased plenty of those copies for you. That's what we're doing on Wednesday nights. We just got through the first chapter. And in his book, Whitney expresses a story or tells a story about a six-year-old boy. And this little six-year-old boy's parents have decided he needs to play guitar. And so they want to discipline him in the sense of playing guitar. Again, not a punishment, but the ability, you know, to learn something that's really powerful. And so he's like, "Oh, yeah, I want to play the guitar. Great." You know, and mom and dad go, "You were playing the guitar." And so he's playing the guitar. And it's great until he looks outside across the street in the park and his friends are playing football. And now he's not so excited about playing guitar because he doesn't understand the purpose. I mean, this is what Whitney writes about the six-year-old boy who just doesn't have an understanding of why he's doing what he's doing. He doesn't see the end result. And so in the story that Whitney tells, an angel shows up and somehow or another whisks this young boy to Carnegie Hall, where at Carnegie Hall, there is a young man playing guitar, and this guy is phenomenal. I mean, just everything that he does is spectacular. I know, I don't play guitar, so I wouldn't even know what to do. Jimmy would know what we're talking about. Jimmy's a good guitar player. He writes, "Kevin," this little boy's name is Kevin, "Kevin is astonished by what he sees and hears. The musician's fingers dance on the strings with fluidity and grace." And Kevin, this little six-year-old boy, thinks, "Ugh, I'm clumsy. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even know how to hold it right." And he's just you know, blown away by the fact that this guy is so incredibly good. And the angel looks at little Kevin and says, "What do you think, Kevin?" And Kevin doesn't even answer. He does this, "Wow." You know, just absolutely incredible and blown away by the beauty of the music. This angel transports little Kevin back to his living room. And he says, "Now, Kevin, I want to explain something to you. What I did is I took you into the future and you got to see yourself. That's you playing that guitar years from now. That's you playing guitar years from now." And he says, "But you have to practice." And he points at the guitar. Now, the question that Whitney asks in the book is the question that we want to kind of think about this morning. And the question, word for word, is, do you think Kevin's attitude toward practice will be different now? Do you think Kevin's attitude toward practice will be different now? I would say absolutely yes. Because any athlete, any artist, anybody involved in any kind of an activity recognizes the fact when you start seeing results and you start recognizing that what you're doing is making a difference, it's an encouragement. It strengthens your resolve. It makes you want to try even harder. I read this story about Pablo Casals.
probably a name most of us have never heard of. But at his time, he was considered the greatest cellist to ever live, Pablo Casals. When he was 95 years old, 95, he was asked why he still practiced 6 hours a day. He's already the greatest cellist to ever live. 6 hours a day. And Pablo said, because I think I'm making progress. I think I'm making progress. See, it's important for us to realize this morning, when we talk about spiritual discipline, part of what we need to recognize is the training that's involved in spiritual disciplines is pointing us and helping us to get to a certain place. If we don't see that place or we don't recognize why the disciplines are there, we may lose our sense of purpose, thus losing our sense of desire. So we need to get some goals. We need to change our vision toward what Bible study does, what prayer does, what meditation does, what these spiritual disciplines do for us. Because if we'll have these goals and these purposes, then I think, I'm pretty sure, that we will be encouraged to continue to try. So when you think of the word discipline, again, the word that comes up is spankings or punishment, or you're getting in trouble for something. And that is not Paul's intention. We want to look at this word discipline this morning. It's an important word for us to understand. Look at 1 Timothy 4, 7 through 9. We got to our verse. You'll remember this when we studied 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. We had some, in fact, Kelly's notes are still there from last Wednesday night. 1 Timothy 4, 7 through 9. So I know he touched on this. He says, have nothing to do with godless myths and old wives' tales. Remember, there was a lot of things going on in Ephesus and he's being warned. Paul is Timothy's mentor and he's saying, hey, don't forget to get rid of some bad things and add some good things. So he says, I want you to have nothing to do with godless myths, old wives' tales. Rather, he says, look what he says, train yourself to be godly. You gotta have the discipline to train. It's an important thing, is to train yourself to be godly. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. This is a trustworthy saying that deserves full acceptance. And I love how Paul says that. It's almost like he's reminding us, and he's reminding Timothy, hey, this is a trustworthy saying. You need to pay attention to this stuff. This is one of those, he who has ears, let him hear, sayings of Jesus. If you're going to listen, then listen. If you're going to hear what I'm saying, then really hear what I'm saying. This is a trustworthy saying. Paul uses the word in the Greek, gumnazo. Gumnazo. Did I make a slide for that, Shane? There it is. Gumnazo. Gymnasium or gymnastics is where we get this word. Gumnazo. It means the idea of rigorous, strenuous, self-sacrificing training an athlete undergoes. This is the word Paul uses in this verse, and he says, I need you to do gumnazo. I need you to train yourself, young Timothy. Why is that important? Because here's something that's interesting that if we don't do our history, we're not going to understand. Did you know that Ephesus had 4 major gymnasiums? The Greeks absolutely loved training. They loved physical fitness. How do I know that? Because there's a place, what is it, Olympia? Olympia. What went on in Olympia? Anybody remember that? The Olympics? The Greeks were into training, and they had these gymnasiums. Here's a picture. You can go there to this day and see this monstrosity of a gymnasium there in Ephesus. Timothy's dad was of what nationality? Anybody remember? Greek. So here's Paul using language of the day, telling Timothy something he's totally going to get. He says, I need you to train yourself to be godly. I need you to train yourself as if you're competing in the Olympics. Now, here's an interesting side bit. I don't know how to get away from the story a little bit. I didn't remember this. I told Kelly this because I didn't know if he mentioned it in his class or not. But you know when the men competed, it was only men that competed in the Olympics? They competed nude.
There's a thought. Yeah, thanks for that, right? It's like, honey, what do you want to do today? Your wife would go, how about going to see the Olympics? You know, and you're like, nah, that's probably a bad idea. So, but these guys, side note, but these guys were training hard. They were training vigorously in Ephesus, where this letter to Timothy is being written to. These Ephesians are going to understand this idea of training physically, because we get that part. I mean, JR's sitting right there. JR, there's a little physical training, right? We all do. Who likes to work out? Well, who works out? Who likes to work out? Now, we work out. We do that for a reason. We do that for a reason, because we want to be fit. Now, it's interesting to me. I wrote this the way I wrote it because it was right out of a book. There was great emphasis in the Greek culture on physical training and in gaining glory from the winning of athletic events. Does that sound familiar? I mean, has life really changed that much? I mean, isn't it true for us today? In fact, today, are not physical trainers a big part of a lot of people's lives? I mean, you got a physical trainer, that guy or that girl who's trained enough themselves to know not only that exercise is important, but eating right is extremely important. And not eating certain foods is extremely important. In other words, if this is the goal, JR, I'm going to pick on you. 2 liter Dr. Pepper a day, right? Part of the goal? You can drink a 2 liter a day? Why? Is that bad? Is Dr. Pepper bad for you?
Maybe.
It's not. Henry goes, it's not. It's really good. Ice cream is on the menu for physical training.
Terrible.
I know.
Blasphemy. He speaks blasphemy.
We just bought the caramel crunch ice cream. I mean, that is like, we're going to kill your children if you can't not eat that. I love you, boys, but you're going to heaven anyway. We have that difficulty.
Be careful, you're meddling.
Now I'm meddling. I am meddling. It is crucial for us to understand that Timothy had a personal trainer. I mean, it's so important for us to get it that Paul is Timothy's personal trainer in every aspect of that word, with the exception of the physical part. You say, well, that didn't make sense. How can it be? We understand what a physical trainer does. What does a spiritual trainer do? The exact same thing, only spiritually. So there are certain foods that you should participate in, spiritual foods, and that you should probably get rid of. The Bible's filled with menus. I mean, go to Galatians chapter 5, and he says, hey, there's some things that you should participate in. These are the things that are of the Spirit, like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Great things to eat. Munch it down, as Ezekiel Elliott's probably going to do today, right?
Feed me.
Eat the good stuff, but don't eat the bad stuff. And if you're going to eat the bad stuff, let it be an exception to the rule, not the rule. And so Paul is telling Timothy, you need to be careful what you eat and what you don't eat. You need to be careful what you're participating in, because it's important to your godliness training. 1 Timothy 4:7 in the Message says this: exercise daily in God. No spiritual flabbiness, please. Workouts in the gymnasium are useful, but a disciplined life in God is far more so, making you fit both today and forever. You can count on this. I mean, physical training is good. Hear this morning, JR, I mentioned you already twice, but anybody. I'm not saying anything is wrong with physical training. Paul didn't either. Paul isn't saying that. But don't allow anything in this world to become more important than God. Whether it's physical training, if it's bowling, if it's running, if it's bicycle riding or whatever. Don't let those things interfere with your spiritual training. How do I know that? Because God says it in a different way in the Sermon on the Mount through Jesus. In the Sermon on the Mount, verse 21. Oh, I'm sorry. I got ahead of myself. Or did I get ahead of myself? Did I turn a page? Wow, I did get ahead of myself. Sorry. Verse 15 and 16, chapter 4. Be diligent in these matters. What matters? It's training. Give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Watch your life, watch your doctrine closely, persevere in them, because if you do, you'll save both yourselves and your hearers. This is just a little bit further down, New International Version. Be diligent in these matters. Give yourselves to them. Paul is helping Timothy. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 11. So right behind this, a couple chapters later, he gives him some of the adds. So you want to add to your diet, bless you. You want to add to the things that you're eating. You want to add to the things that you're doing, and you want to get rid of some things. So look what he says. But you, man of God, flee from all this. What? All this godlessness, this gossiping that's going on, and the things that are happening in Ephesus, where they're trying to take your attention away from godliness, where other men are coming in and preaching a gospel different from the one you've heard. I need you to flee all that kind of stuff and pursue righteousness and godliness and faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. The goal in spiritual disciplines is simple. The goal in spiritual disciplines is simple. We want our bodies to look like Jesus' body. Piece of cake. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a beast. I saw pictures of him here not very long ago on the beach. It was not what I remember Arnold Schwarzenegger looking like in some of those movies. Time and gravity has met its match. But when we're thinking physical specimens, you can think of whoever you want to think about. But put that guideline, whatever that is in your mind, if you're working out or the runner or the tennis player or the bowler or whatever it is, put them in and say, I want to do like that or be like that. In the case of Christianity, isn't it Jesus' body that we're supposed to look like? And you say, well, we don't know what Jesus looked like. No, I'm not talking about his physical body. Spiritually, isn't that the ideal? A heart of compassion, you know, eyes that see people for who they really are, not judgmentally. You know, hands that serve. I mean, feet that carry the gospel. I mean, ears that listen, as Hunter would say, a stomach like his, that doesn't stomach evil. Remember that? You drew that. It's not a physical thing. It's a spiritual thing. The goal in spiritual disciplines is for our body to look like Jesus' body. Look what Whitney writes. I've got this on here as well. The Lord Jesus not only expects these disciplines of us, he modeled them for us. I love that. He applied his heart to discipline. He disciplined himself for the purpose of godliness. And if we are going to be Christ-like, we must live as Christ lived. That's one of Whitney's premises. And he's going to continue to write about that throughout this book. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul said it very simply. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Because I'm trying to make my life look like Jesus' life, because I'm doing those things that Jesus has given me to do, I want you to do the same exact thing. I want you to train. I want you to work hard. Dallas Willard, another writer, he wrote the book The Spirit of the Disciplines, said this: my central claim is that we can become like Christ by doing one thing. City slickers, one thing. By following him in the overall style of life he chose for himself. If we have faith in Christ, we must believe that he knew how to live. We can, through faith and grace, become like Christ. And the word he uses, practicing, training is the word as well. By practicing the types of activities he himself practiced in order to remain constantly at home in the fellowship of his Father. Now remind me, isn't Jesus the one who lived the life of perfection? Isn't he the one that conquered all temptation? Isn't he the one that fulfilled all of God's wishes and desires? Therefore, if I'm going to look at anyone as an example of faith, I'm thinking Christ would be front and foremost. Maybe that's why the writer of Hebrews says, you know, you got this crowd of witnesses, incredible crowd of witnesses. Man, you got Moses and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Noah and Moses and all of these incredible characters of faith.
But at the end, he says, hey, they're all around you. You can see them. But as your focus, look at Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of your faith. Look at him. I mean, this guy is the one you need to have your eyes on. So our goal and our purpose is to be Christ-like. Now, when we're practicing these spiritual disciplines, one important goal in regards to discipline is this: learning to properly order our loves. Learning how to properly order our loves. We have all of these loves. Where do they order themselves? St. Augustine, he argued that virtue is essentially rightly ordered love, and sin is disordered love. That was St. Augustine. But he said, but living a just and holy life requires one to be capable of an objective and impartial evaluation of things. Right? To love things, that is to say, in the right order, so that you do not love what is not to be loved or fail to love what is to be loved. Getting our priorities in the right place. Now I'll get to what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, because he said it in different ways. In verse 21 of chapter 6, again, we're in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm trying to mirror some of these lessons as we put Sundays and Wednesdays together. But Jesus says, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Wherever your focus is, that's where your heart's going to be. So you need to get your loves in the right kind of order. How? Well, no one can serve two masters. You'll either hate the one and love the other. This is verse 24. Love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And right behind there, again, he talks about the importance of our vision and our sight. And he reminds us that, hey, there's food and drink and clothing and all of those things. But quit worrying about those things, because you need to do what? Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. And all of this other stuff will fall right into place. There's some power verses in Scripture. I know one verse may not be more important than the other, but man, when you're starting to develop this theology or philosophy of training in righteousness, you need to put first things first. Jesus says it over and over again. Order your loves properly. Is there anything wrong with bowling? Absolutely not. If you say opposite to that, you're pagan.
Smelly shoes.
Yeah. Anything wrong with that? Right. There are so many things that we want to be involved in. No one's picking on one person or the other because of our loves. Right. I mean, JR, do you like working out? No, not at all. Right? You love it. And for all of us who have found, you like riding bikes? Maybe. Yeah. All right, so here's the thing, and I'm going to say this as truthfully and honestly as I can. A lot of people don't like to read the Bible and pray and meditate and fast and do those things because they never see the results. Just go back all the way to the beginning of the story. You know, why am I playing guitar? I could be out playing football with my buddies. If we could fast forward and an angel could take us and say, hey, you practice these things right here. Here's where you're going to be 10 years from now. We would dedicate ourselves even more so to that. But what I love about that whole thought is you really already have that in front of you. I mean, an angel doesn't have to take you 10 years in front of your life. All you have to do is look at the cloud of witnesses around you and look at their priorities. He says, people who speak thus make it clear, the writer of Hebrews says, they're seeking a better country. They're seeking a better life. They're seeking something greater. When we put these disciplines in practice, it's going to change a lot of things in our life. How do you love it? See, I don't love lifting weights anymore. Bad shoulder, pulled groin. Oh, really? You know, it's painful to do some of those things for me. I used to lift weights all the time. I used to love it. I had a personal trainer. I mean, before personal trainers were even a thing. Do I want to do that? Not much desire. You know why? Because I think this is about as good as it's going to get. I can look in the future and go, I can see my dad. It didn't get much better for him. It's probably going to be better for me. Now, there's some benefits. There's some benefits. Don't hear me not say that. But see, something I can relate to is the pride. I have people, I work with them in bowling all the time, and they say, man, I just want to get better. And I'm like, well, can I give you some drills? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, because I noticed something about your game. It's going to bring up Cameron's game. He's got a great game. I'm not going to pick on his game. But I watch certain people bowl, and they can't spare. And I'm like, well, you need to learn how to spare. If you can learn how to spare, anybody can throw a strike ball. You do that every. It's all the other little things, making these little adjustments and figuring out the rights and lefts. Cammie knows. Cammie's married to somebody that loves bowling way more than me, right? And we say it all the time. Jared's one of my best friends. He's like, man, people just, they won't practice. They don't try anymore. I'm like, so you really want to get better? Yes. Here's a drill. Go into the bowling center, pay $10 for 6 games, take one ball, stare at one pin, and shoot it at all hour. Just throw at one pin. Oh, that's boring. I don't want to do that. So then what you're really saying to me is, I want to get better, I just don't want to practice. I don't want to do anything to get better, I just want to be better. I need to learn how to spare this, I need to learn how to do this. But you don't want to do anything about it. So let's take that into our spiritual lives. Do we not want to be able to have an answer? Do we want to answer to those who say, well, why do you believe that? Well, then you practice it. You practice your answer. You read about it. You have a conversation with it. You look at the person you love. Hey, I want to practice my answer. I'm going to practice how I say this to somebody if they ask me this question. That way I'm not caught off guard. I mean, I have people say things to me every once in a while, but you know, it's fire like, ooh, that was brutal. Well, that was brutally honest. Why? I practice. If Bill Maher asked me to be on a show tomorrow, I'd be ready. Probably practice a little bit more. I want to practice. I want to be ready to give an answer. Paul says that. I mean, the Bible says that. Be ready to give an answer. So how do I practice spiritual disciplines? You do them. And that's what the Wednesday nights is about. That's what this book is about, is how do I pray better? You know, how do I read the Bible better? How do I will want to read the Bible more, but I don't get it sometimes. And how do I fast? And what does that mean? Does it have to be food? No. It can be anything. So we work through these things. That's what this book is about. That's what spirituality and spiritual disciplines is about. It's about becoming Christ-like. So how to order my loves. Jesus said it well. Don't be devoted to the one and despise the other. Now there's a guy by the name of Brett McKay who said, I want you to align your priorities. That was his paper titled, Align Your Priorities. He said this, if you say God is the thing you love most in life, but you spend 2 hours each day on social media and 5 minutes reading your Bible, you really love Instagram more than God. I mean, this is brutally in your face. If you say you love your family more than your job, but you keep saying yes to unnecessary overtime at work, another place he talks about activities that pull you away from your family, you really love work more than your family. You know, that hits me right in the face, because in my early years of ministry, I neglected my family for the sake of that ministry, and there was a balance there that I never found until later. If you say you love the ideal of friendship, but you snub a nerdy acquaintance to look cooler in front of your bubbies, buddies, you really love popularity more than friendship. Your loves are out of order. We can all look at things in our life and prioritize the things that are most important. That is all that Paul is saying to Timothy in this letter, both letters, and what Jesus says to us throughout the Sermon on the Mount. Get your priorities straight, and everything else will fall into place. It is okay to love other things and other people. Just get your priorities straight. Get your love life in order. if you desire to be more like Christ, if you desire maturity, if you understand this idea of training our souls, then those priorities will align themselves. I love this book. I love several of the books that I've read on spiritual disciplines in the past, and I want to encourage you strongly on Wednesday nights to be a part of this. At least go through the book. If you can't be here on Wednesday nights, grab a book and read it and practice what's in the book. I'll leave you with this quote from Whitney in the first chapter. He says, "Although God will grant Christ's likeness to us when Jesus returns, until then, He intends for us to grow toward it. We aren't merely to wait for holiness. We're to pursue it." And that is spiritual discipline. Hunger and thirst for righteousness, Jesus says, and you'll be satisfied. Every one of us wants satisfaction in this life. So we need to be determined, to pursue holiness. And that is what this Wednesday night lesson and the sermons on Sundays will follow that book. And so